Welcome to It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Shamri. Hopefully everybody has a good weekend. I'm going to Relay for Life. It's a cancer benefit walk thing. I'm doing it for work because if we go, they donate money. So I'm going and hoping to see some people, so it'll be fun. And the episode we're doing today is from Rodrigo. He wanted the Selena episode, but he got to me like right after that and hit me with this one. And so I decided to do it because I really didn't have a plan. So it fit in just nicely. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about Dorothea Puente. She was born Dorothea Gray, and she was born in 1929, so she's obviously old as fuck. She was born to Trudy and Jess. Her upbringing was very traumatic. Her parents were alcoholics. Her father always would get drunk and threaten to kill himself in front of the children. He did die of tuberculosis in 1937. Her mother lost custody of all of her children in 1938, and then died in a motorcycle accident later at the end of that year. Her siblings and her were sent to an orphanage where, of course, unfortunately, she was sexually abused. Her first marriage, she was 16 years old, and she married a soldier named Fred, who had just returned from World War II. They had two daughters together in 1946 and 1948. She sent one of her children to go live with a family member in Sacramento, California, and put the other one up for adoption. She left that husband in late 1948 after she suffered a miscarriage. In the spring, she was arrested for purchasing women's accessories with forged checks. She was charged with two counts of forgery and served 4 months in jail and 3 years on probation. 6 months after her release, she left that husband. In 1952, she married a seaman named Axel in San Francisco. She created a fake profile and a whole new persona when she married him, claiming to be a Muslim and all that nonsense. They had a horrible marriage. She took advantage of him when he would go out on sea adventures. She would bring dudes down at home and get dick down and spend all of his money gambling. She was arrested in 1960 for owning and operating a brothel under the guise of a bookkeeping firm in Sacramento. She was found guilty of that also and spent 90 days in the Sacramento County Jail. In 1961, her husband Axel at the time had her committed to a state hospital after a drinking binge lying, criminal activity, and suicidal attempts, where she was diagnosed a pathological liar with an unstable personality. Shockingly, they divorced in 1966, although she would continue to use his last name for a different side hustle, like her alter ego. She would portray herself as a kind church Christian woman. She established a background, well, fake background, in caregiving and helping others. And in 1968, she married Roberto, oh shit, I already said her last name. Dorothy Piet? I don't know. Piet. After 16 months, they separated because of domestic abuse was the main cause. And in 1967, she attempted to serve him with divorce papers, but he fled to Mexico, where their divorce would not be finalized until 1973. They continued to have a really shitty relationship. She put a restraining order against him in 1975, and then she would go on as Dorothy Piet after that for years to come following her divorce. After that divorce, she wanted to focus on running her boarding house on at 21st and F Street in Sacramento. And here in Idaho, if you well, not all the time, but like my cousin grew up on J Street, and that's the hood. Like in the our lettered streets are the hood, and so are our numbered streets until you get to a certain point, and then it's like super, super nice. Like literally, two houses divide you from scary and and like pretty and like I don't know. It divide. There's a division. Anyway, so she would establish herself as a person of the community. She would take in homeless, alcoholic homeless, mentally ill. She would also hold Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and she would also be the one that would most likely assist you in signing up for Social Security benefits. She would change her public image by letting her hair grow out and grow gray. Instead of dyeing it, she lost all of her teeth. So if she didn't have her teeth in, she looked older as and the gray hair. And she would wear big grandma glasses and vintage clothing to help her with her appearance. She was also a very highly respected member of the Sacramento Hispanic community. She funded charities, scholarships, radio programs, and she eventually met and married a guy named Pedro Montalvo, but he was not stupid and he left their relationship a week after they got married. In 1978, she was charged and convicted of illegally cashing 34 state and federal checks that belonged to her tenants and was given probation and had to pay about $4,000 back in restitution. So I watched her, that's just her back history, all from good old Wikipedia.com. I watched her police interviews when they interview her before they finish the rest of the digging. Like when they, because they go, one guy goes missing, that starts the investigation, and then they go, they find a body or whatever. So they go, they take her to the thing. And I tell you what, she. I know what she did was horrible. Okay. But if you did not know what she did, oh my goodness, pinch her cheeks. She is the cutest little grandma. If you had no idea what she did, like, she is literally the cutest little grandma. I am obsessed with old people. I love old people. They are so freaking cute. Just pinch your little cheekies. Just love them. Love them to pieces. So she was actually. In that house that she was operating in is where she lived before she went to prison the previous time. And then when she got out of prison, that's where she went back and then started her boarding house, where literally none of the parole agents that she was dealing with, because she was dealing with people's probation officers or their social workers, nobody ever really looked into her. They all took her on face value because she was cute, little, and old. And she really just was like, well, I'm cute and I'm little and I'm old. And everybody was like, you're right. Anyway, so once they find out that a lot of things are going wrong, the whole world finds out that this cute little grandma is not a cute little grandma.
And even in the interrogation room, she's like, body? My yard? I didn't do it. I'm old. I didn't dig a hole. I can't dig a hole. And she's like, no one in the house can help dig a hole either. They're all old and on Social Security too. So she's like, it wasn't us, chief. I'm sorry. Turns out, police don't believe you when you say things like that. So, according to Wikipedia, the list of her murders are: in April of 1982, 61-year-old Ruth began living there in an upstairs apartment. She soon died of an overdose of cocaine and methamphetamine. She told the police that Ruth was very sad and depressed because her husband was terminally ill and believed that she had committed suicide. A few weeks later, the police returned for Malcolm McKenzie, one of the elderly people. He was 74 years old. She was drugging and stealing. She was accused of drugging and stealing money from him. And she was convicted on those charges in April of 1982 and sentenced to 5 years in prison. And she had begun to correspond with Everson Gilmuth. He was 77 years old. He was a retiree from Oregon. He was in a pen pal relationship with her in prison. She was released from prison in 1985 after only serving 3 years of her sentence. And when she walked outside of those prison gates, there he was, good old Malcolm, in his red 1984 pick'em up truck. They develop a relationship and wedding plans, and all that soon happened. Well, in November of 85, she hires a guy to do some wood paneling in her apartment, and she pays him like $800 and gives him a red Ford pickup, which she was like, oh, my boyfriend moved to Los Angeles and he no longer needs it, so by all means, you can. And then she says, hey, you know, since I just gave you all that stuff, I have one more favor to ask of you, if you don't mind. Could you build me a 6x3x2 box? Like, she hands him measurements. I just picture it in my head. That's what she does. She hands him measurements and she's like, this will do. Thanks. And she says, it is for books and other items that I'm going to discard of. She asked him to, after it was filled, he nailed it shut and transferred it to a storage thing. And so they load it up. She has him, obviously, loaded up into the back of the truck. On their way to there, they stop on the off of the highway and they just unload that box just on the side of the highway. Poof, gone. And so by a riverbank, and it was an unofficial household dumping site. So you're not supposed to do that. Oh, God, that's bad. We don't do that. That's bad. And in 1986, a fisherman spotted it and obviously called the police, looked inside, found the body. And she continued to collect his pensions and wrote letters to his family explaining why he has not been contacting them. And then she just continued to run the boarding house like nothing ever happened. Taking in 40 new tenants, his body remained unidentified for 3 years. She continued to accept elderly boarders. Oh, man, you shouldn't say elderly or old. Turns out some people get super, super, super duper offended to being called old. And you shouldn't call them old because they're not old. People are not old. It's only a state of mind. She was obviously very known through all the social workers as being the one who would take on the quote unquote tough cases. And that would be drug addicts, abusive people. She would run down every month. She would get these people, sign them up for Social Security. Then she would run to the mailbox every month, get their money before she got it, before they could see it, go to this bar, cash the checks, go home, give everybody their money, knowing they're going to go get drunk, high, or whatever their thing is, and be out of money, and then she would just handle the rest. So that's how she was in the Hispanic community, doing all of the scholarships, radio shows, donations, and all that fun jazz. One of her neighbors at one point in time noticed that this guy known as Chief, who she stated she had adopted as a handyman, had Chief dig in the basement, and he would bring out wheelbarrows at a time, and the boisement in the basement floor was soon then covered in concrete slabs. He later dismantled the garage in the backyard and then also installed a fresh pad of concrete. And then soon after, Chief disappeared. So, on November 11th, 1988, the police go to her and they are talking to her about her missing tenant, Alberto. This is the guy I was telling you about. And his social worker put him there because he had an alcohol problem. And at first, she was like, this is going to be good for you. You're going to be fine. And then when she went to go check on him, he was good. He was fine. He was bathed. He was clothed. It seemed that Dorothea really did her number on him and changed his life around for the best. Well, then he goes to rehab. He says, I don't want to go. Like, I don't want to go back. Something happens. Anyway, the social worker cannot find him anymore. She calls Dorothea. Dorothea's like, hey, check it out. His family members came here the other day after church and took all of his shit and said that he was going to go live in Utah. God bless. And the social worker's like, yeah, that's a crock of shit. I'm going to call the police. Bring you to where we are now. And he was, like I said already, he was a disabled man. He had also had schizophrenia. And after they were there, the police were like, hey, we need to come here and talk to these people. Well, while they were there, all these alcoholics and drunks and everybody around were like, no, Dorothea's great. Dorothea's great. Well, there's one guy who's like, Dorothea's not great. And so he hands the cop a note and he's like, hey, dude, two blocks to the left, I'll meet you. She'll never know. And when he goes, hey, check it out, bro. The night that Alberto went missing, there was bump, 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 bump on the stair. Now there's fresh grass outside that's not fresh anymore. And he starts telling the cops all this shit. He's like, I'm not saying she's killing people, but I'm just saying people are fucking gone and there's new things happening to the yard. And so the cops go and they ask her, they're like, hey, can we participate in digging up of your yard? And she says, well, sure. Of course you can, good sir. Well, they find the body, one body buried on there. So there's a total of nine. There was her boyfriend who, there was the Everson fella. There was a Leon. There was a Ruth. There was Alvaro, also known as Bert. There was a Dorothea. There was a Benjamin, a James, a Vera, a Betty. And so while investigators are digging up her yard or whatever, she calls the main detective guy and she goes, hey, I cannot believe you found another body. OMG. I am freaking out. I need to go have a cup of coffee with a family member at the hotel across the way. And the cop's like, well, I can't charge you with anything. This house is old as shit. I can't say you did it, even though I think you did it. I can't prove it right now. Yeah, you can have your cup of coffee. He walks her over there. The lady inside says that the cute little old lady walks inside, walks to the payphone, makes a phone call, then sneaks up the back, dips out. Well, he goes back. And when he goes back, that's when they're just like, body, body here, body there, body there, body here. And so, obviously, she skedaddled. She knew it was coming. She skedaddled. Well, she was on the run for quite a long time. And what got her caught was, obviously, it was very publicized what she did. It was like Nightmare on F Street and like a whole, it was a huge hoop to do in California then. And so she goes and is smooshing up to some dude at a bar, some older gentleman at a bar. And she's like, hey, older guy, are you on Social Security? And that old drunk was sitting there and he goes, oh, no, 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 you sneaky bitch. You're her. So he calls the police, tells the police go to her hotel, knock, knock, knock. Are you her? And at first she's like, no. And then she's like, no, I really am. I am. So her trial starts in October of 1992, ended later on that year. There was over 130 witnesses. The fucking jury almost ruined it. They didn't. Thankfully, they were able to keep their minds focused and give the right verdict in this. And it only would have been one. Could you imagine being that one person who was like, but no, I couldn't believe it. Oh, man. How horrible would your life have been? So, I don't know. This old lady is gangster as shit. And, like, she literally, dude, they had me believe in her. At first, like, when they were like, oh, there was holes in the backyard or whatever. I literally was like, dude, there's no way she did it. Holes are hard. So hard. And then you find out that this gangster ass old lady would call up the felon, like little housing area, a couple blocks over, and be like, hey, you guys want to make a quick buck? Come and dig some fucking holes for me real quick, like. And then she'd pay him. And they would be like, we didn't know she was putting bodies in there. I'm sorry, but if anybody ever randomly called me up and was like, hey, make a hole, no questions asked, just make the hole. I ain't going to put nothing in it while you're here and just leave. I'm going to pay you. I know 100% I just helped commit a murder. Like, I'm not stupid. That is literally what we just did. We just covered up a body of some sorts. Could be a pet, but then again, why do you need a big hole for a pet? So, yeah, I don't know. And I'm not saying she was a gangster ass old lady and like a right on. But I mean, to make everybody, to mend everybody's little minds about you and be like, I'm a cute little old lady and use that because she obviously is aware that cute little old ladies are freaking adorable and precious and everybody loves old people. I shouldn't say old people. I was not going to say old. I'm trying not to use that word. Also, it's very offensive from what I understand. So, yeah, I don't know. She was, I've heard of this old lady before from my days of listening to other true crime podcasts. And, like, you can't really use, she's one of those people that were like, well, my shitty life. So she didn't get executed. She got life in prison because they used her shitty life to sway everybody to make them feel bad because she had a shitty upbringing. And I swear, if I ever get in trouble with the cops, I am playing up my daddy story so good. Those guys aren't even gonna know. I'm gonna have everybody feeling bad for me. But yeah, I don't know. I was impressed. And then to make it on the run, and like she was, everybody was like, Dorothea, find Dorothea. And no one could find her. Was very, I don't know, I was
I get amusement out of those things. I'm considering me fucked up. When my brothers go on their run from the cops here, I don't help them. I won't lie to you guys. I won't help them because I think it's the only thing that they should get. Like, that's how you make your paycheck, right? You're an investigator. If I found him, you would pay me, but they don't. So I'm like, no, you guys can find him. And so, like, to go on the run, especially as a cute little old lady, I give her props. I do. You guys can judge me if you want, but I give her props because that shit ain't easy. And she didn't even really, like, she tried to lie, but then again, she was like, no, that's me. So, I don't know. I liked this one. This one gave me a sick little twist of enjoyment. It's wrong, okay, before all you people come at me and be like, murder's murder. Murder is murder. Duh. But still, like, she's a old-ass lady. And she had a freaking death room. I didn't even tell you that. She had a death room. When they got inside, there was a death room. So, like, that she would just have you go lay in and die until she could find a felon to come get your hole dug. Because, I mean, she's old. She can't be out there digging your hole herself. So you had to wait a little bit before you could go in the hole. Just, ugh. Oh, and at one point in time, dude, so when the cops are, like, digging the first body out or whatever, they think the old lady's leg is a fucking tree thingy. Limb or whatever, root. And so the cops, like, heave-ho in on it, and he's like, we gotta move it, and, like, they're smashing it with shovels and just craziness. Yeah, it was a leg. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Imagine being the cop who's just standing there once you fall on your bum from all of the heeing and the hoving, and then there's a leg in your hand. And, like, a leathery thing that you were like, I don't know what this is, if this is clothing or what this is, you don't know. And then you go to the morgue later on and they're like, oh, that leathery substance? Oh, bro, that was her skin. Like, that was skinage. Ugh, God, it's just so, oh, God. So, yeah. And she had, like, this little drunk homie that lived in her house who went along with all of her bullshit and was like, yep, don't know what happened. He knew what happened. You had to know what happened. How do all these people just go up missing from an old dead lady, an old lady house? I don't know. It was a good one. I found it very interesting. There's an Oxygen Channel show on Netflix that you can go and, I mean, not Netflix, sorry, the Who of the Lou. Hulu. You can go on Hulu and watch it. It's pretty good. I mean, I liked it a lot, obviously, because I watched it. It's only a two-parter, and it is, I was trying to find the name of it, like, all slick and tell you, but I couldn't. It is called Murder at the Boarding House. There's a part one and a part two. So, you guys can go and watch that if you guys want more information, or obviously just Google her name or look at any other true crime podcast. They have all done it. I just think that it's very interesting that this little hood rat was able to get away with it for so long. And especially since she went to prison for drugging people and robbing them before, you would think. But then again, I don't know. This was back then, back when not everything was all connected and it wasn't as easy to know who was shady because you couldn't just type their name into a computer. So I guess there's that. I always forget that when you look back on crimes and stuff, you're like, well, why didn't they? Oh, well, they didn't have it. Duh. So yeah. I have another one coming up. I have a guy from work. His name is Kenny. He listens to all of my episodes. He actually started at number one. He's all the way caught up now. And he has an episode pick coming. And unfortunately, I don't remember. And he is in California for a funeral. So God bless his family. And when he gets back, I will figure out what he wanted and do that one.
And then another person from work was like, oh my God, you have a podcast. Crazy. I know about something. So here's that stuff. Like, I don't go around just telling everybody that I have a podcast. I just let them find out. And then when they come to me, I like that moment where I get to feel cool and be like, yeah, I do. What? You didn't know? I like that. So I got a couple more fan ones coming up. But if you want to get one in there, just send me a message. Preferably a Facebook or Instagram message. Not big on the Twitter. Or a good old-fashioned email. I do check those. I do. Not often, but I do. And then, yeah, if you guys are in the Idaho Falls, anywhere in the Idaho Falls surrounding area, make sure you go to Relay for Life tonight from 6 to 11 at, like, I think it's Rafton Stadium. I'm not 100% sure. Probably should have told you 100% sure because I'm telling you about it. And I'm going to tell you about it. It is Thunder Ridge Stadium. There we go. So go support your love for survivors and those who have lost the good fight. My grandmother beat breast cancer twice and then it eventually won. My aunts, my mother, everybody in my family is mainly cancer survivors. I also just found out that Jeff from the Jeff and Greg podcast is also a cancer survivor, which just adds more to his amazing awesomeness. And yeah, so you can come support and show love for him and everybody else. It's just a good cause. Come out, walk. I guess I've never gone, so this is my first year going. There's going to be, from what I'm told, there's booths and activities and just funness and just getting a chance to tell these survivors that, hey, I'm here, and then walk, of course, in the shoes of those who aren't. So, yeah, it'll be fun. I'm excited. My kids are coming with me, so that's kind of cool. I don't ever usually do stuff with my children like this. So I'm super, super stoked. And then my best friend from work is coming. So that's also cool. So anyway, it's going to be a great time. Super, super stoked. Can't wait for tonight. It's going to be great. So see everybody there at Thunder Ridge Stadium tonight from 6 to 11. And to come show love for Relay for Life is what it's called. So on that note, you guys have a great weekend. Be safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, which means you can do anything. And I'll talk with you guys next week. See ya.